Last time I spoke about the subject of physical repentance and talked about how it's a turning. It is meaning of repentance. Repentance doesn't just mean being sorry for what we have done. It's a turning from one way of life to another way of life, from Satan's way of life to God's way of life. Satan's way avoids the penalty. It tries to avoid the penalty at all times. God's way is to have that penalty paid, and Christ pays that penalty. And then from that point forward, we live a different type of life. We live in a different way. And that way of life involves God's law. It involves God's law in every way. It involves it spiritually, yes, certainly, as far as spiritual repentance is concerned. But physically as well, it involves the laws that God has made that in fact regulate our health. Now, those are both mental laws and also physical laws, but those laws actually have a physical impact on our body. And those laws really all work together. They all pull together. They all are very holistic in the way in fact they work. Now, I was going to go on to the subject of food. However, I was just thinking over the week, and I thought, really, that subject doesn't start with food. Before you come to food, now, obviously, to know what kind of food you're going to eat and what kind of food we should have, it takes a mental process to make sure that we mentally think, right, we're going to do this, and mentally think we're going to do something else, and are able to mentally plan our meals and the way in which food is grown and so on. But there's much, much more as far as the mind is concerned. In fact, the mind has a great deal. It really controls everything. Regarding the holistic, and I use that term not in any kind of modernistic way, but a grouping all the factors together, the mind really has enormous influence on everything that takes place as far as our health is concerned. Turn over to Matthew chapter 15. Matthew chapter 15. Now, what Mr. Armstrong was bringing out in The World Tomorrow regarding what is real life is not this physical chemical existence. This physical chemical existence is here for a while, and then it comes to a close, it comes to an end. And this is very much what Christ is talking about here in Matthew 15. But, you know, the Pharisees were so concerned with the physical washing of hands. And yes, they were thinking about it in a spiritual way. But as Christ says in verse 17, he says, Matthew 15, 17, "Do not you yet understand that whatever enters into the mouth goes into the belly and cast out into the draught?" In other words, it goes into the toilet bowl. "But those things which proceed out of the mouth come out of the heart, and they defile the man. For out of the heart proceeds evil thoughts, murders, adulteries, fornications, thefts, false witness, and blasphemies." And also, out of the heart proceeds all of our various problems that we tend to have, if you trace the thing all the way back, the various problems in our health as well, has come out of the heart of man. Even, you know, the Chernobyl, and if we have some irradiation from the subject of Chernobyl, that's come out of the heart of man. Somebody got together and designed the Chernobyl nuclear reactor. All of these things have come out of the minds of men. And therefore, if we're going to actually start at some particular point, we need to start at that particular point. The mind of man and the way in which that mind works, I think, is probably the first thing we need to look at, really, before we go into the subject of food. These are the things which defile a man, for to eat with unwashed hand doesn't defile a man. So the emphasis that Christ had made me consider whether in fact that would be the right way forward. If you turn over to 1 Corinthians 13, we'll have a look at another scripture as well, another aspect of this, the emphasis. It says, "Though I speak with the tongues of men and of angels, and do not have the godly love, the godly character of agape, then I'm become a sounding brass and tinkling cymbal. Though I have the gift of prophecy and understand all mysteries and all knowledge, and though I have all faith so I can remove mountains, and I don't have that godly character, I'm nothing." It doesn't make any difference whatsoever. "Though I bestow all my goods to feed the poor, and though I give my body to be burned, and I haven't that godly character, it profits me nothing. And though I have all the food the completely right and everything, I get my 8 hours sleep every night, and I do all of, I go and exercise every day faithfully, and I don't have that godly character, then let's turn over to Proverbs 15. Proverbs 15, and just remind ourselves what it says here. And again, this should influence our thinking on the subject. Because here in Proverbs 15, it says, in verse 15, verse 16, better is a little with the fear of the eternal than great treasure and trouble therewith. And it goes on and expands on that. He says, better is a dinner of herbs where love is than a stalled ox and hatred therewith. So there's the character of God. Love being, it's not agape here, but it's still applies. The character of God, the fear of the eternal, the character of God, the way of God, which is a way of love. If we don't get that right, all the food that we have, all the wonderful exercise that we engage in and so on, it's not going to give us what we need. And in fact, the mind has an enormous bearing on everything to do with health. And it really, we really, really need to understand that. We really need to get to grips with that, particularly as we go into the future. And this is what I would like to do today, is I want to talk about the physical power of godly thinking. You know, you used to have the power of positive thinking that people have. Well, the power of positive thinking, which is a book, I think it was, wasn't it? I don't know who wrote it, but anyway, I think it was a book that came out back in the 60s. But the physical power of godly thinking really is what we're talking about, because it is powerful. It has an enormous bearing on our health. And if we think we can just by prune juice and trying to make sure that get our exercise, we're going to have great, wonderful health. We've got another thing coming. If our mind is completely going in an opposite direction, you see, God has constructed this earth. He's constructed our bodies. He's constructed the natural world so that it teaches us a lesson. The goal and end result is not a physical lesson. It's a spiritual lesson. But he teaches us through the physical means. And those physical means are that basically if we go God's way, then we will go a way of health. And it will include food, the food that we eat, the exercise that we get and so on. But it's also the mental approach that we have to life, the way of looking at life, the way of behaving in life, the way of behaving with one another. So the physical power, and it is a power that really precedes the actions that we have. It precedes the actions both spiritually and also physically, and the things that we eat as well as and the exercise that we get. Now, I wanted to, first of all, the point I wanted to go into is, first of all, I wanted to talk about the environment actually degenerating. As we look at this environment that we find ourselves in, it is degenerating all the time. It's getting more and more polluted. And generally, we are suffering as a result of that. And there's no way we can get away from it. That's the point. But what we can do is we can make sure that our minds are in the right place and make sure that our attitude and frame of mind, our emotions are in the right place, and that will give us a great deal more health than if we get all the other boxes ticked and ignored the emotions, ignored the mental side of things. Secondly, not to put too much of an emphasis on it, but the future, the tribulation, is going to be even worse. If you think it's bad now, well, don't worry about it, it's going to get even worse. So the future is going to get worse. And there are specific things that are mentioned within Scripture. And the inference is that there are certain areas of our anatomy that are going to actually be affected by what is coming on the earth. Thirdly, I want to talk about the physical need for faith. Because it's faith in God that will actually allow us to get over these problems, these difficulties. If we have the kind of faith that is necessary, we will have the kind of, it'll lead towards health. If we don't have the faith that's necessary, it will take us away from health. And we will suffer as a consequence of that. And finally, I want to talk about three areas, specific areas, that the mind does in fact have an influence on. And that is the gut, the heart, and the bones. The gut, the heart, and the bones. And the bones, quite frankly, have a great bearing on the immune system, and talks about pestilences and so on. I'm not saying that we are going to escape the pestilences that are coming just purely by having, thinking positive thoughts. I'm not saying that at all. But if we are plugged into the vine, if we're in contact with God, we don't have to worry about them. We can have faith that God will look after us through these times. And yes, it'll be supernaturally where necessary. But a certain degree of it is going to have to rest on our shoulders as well, that he expects us to behave in a health-giving way and not go ahead and abuse our bodies and minds, living a life which is fraught and faithless and therefore giving us problems. Now, when we're looking at the environment degenerating, well, there's really no unpolluted food. There's no unpolluted environment. Everywhere we turn, it's pollution. And certainly when I mentioned to you before about the plastics, there's another article I dug out here about plastics. Not that I'm against all plastics. I mean, most of our fridge has got plastics in it. I mean, you know, what Tupperware bowl do you know of that isn't plastic? But it says, Professor Schottick, I think it is, of Heidelberg University in Germany, said, "I don't want to shock people, but here's what I know. Antimony is being continuously released into bottled drinking water, and the water in PET bottles is contaminated." Now, PET stands for polyethylene terephthalate. But anyway, plastic, in other words. It's a kind of plastic. And apparently, almost all water bottles that you find, which are made of plastic, have got this chemical in there. It says, he tested groundwater and 15 types of bottled mineral water in his native Canada. The groundwater contained 2 parts per trillion antimony. Bottled water had an average of 160 parts per trillion of antimony when opened immediately after bottling. But groundwater stored in a PET plastic bottle had 630 parts per trillion. So it's changed from, 2 parts to 630. This is the whatever that is, 300 times as much. The professor then tried an experiment in Europe, collecting 48 brands of water in PET bottles and water from its source in the ground at a German bottling plant. And the water had 4 parts of antimony before being bottled. The contents of a new bottle had 360, and when opened 3 months later, had a staggering 700 parts per trillion. Now, what do you do? Buy bottled water and avoid the chlorine and the fluorine and everything else? And then you get your antimony. As I say, the environment is degenerating. And to try and escape this, it is impossible. It's not almost impossible. It is impossible. We are living in a polluted environment. The plastics and the chemical pollution that is all around us. I mean, fertilizers, as far as fertilizers are concerned, turn here we're in Proverbs 5. It's actually being used as an analogy here in Proverbs chapter 5. It's not actually talking about spring water as such. It's talking about the relationship between a husband and a wife. That's what it's talking about. But it's using something which was so common at that time that everybody had, that everybody used, to illustrate how pure and undefiled it is. And here in chapter 5, verse 15, it says, "Drink waters out of your own cistern, running waters out of your own well. Let your fountains be dispersed abroad, and rivers of waters in the street. Let them be your own, and not strangers with you. And let your fountain be blessed, and rejoice with the wife of your youth." So it's using that illustration as something totally undefiled, as pure. The water that we get out of our own well, out of our own spring. Now, we have our own well, we have our own spring, but I don't use that water. I actually use the water that comes out of the tap delivered by the water board. Part of the reason is that you're actually keeping the thing pure, if pure, and tested and everything else. But part of the reason is around our little holding are farms. And the water supply that comes into that particular well is coming from farmland. And the farmers, come the springtime and comes throughout the summertime, pour on artificial fertilizers all over that land. And undoubtedly you'd get nitrates coming into that. At the very least nitrates, probably PK as well. But fertilizers are certainly a problem, and it's not just a problem in the area of water that being polluted. It's also an area of what the fertilizers are being used for, because when they actually are used and they force the growth, but the growth occurs, but the mineralization doesn't happen. So what then happens? Well, let me just read you something as far as the where is this coming from? It's from Vitamins for Stress. It says, when we are stressed, and who isn't, our bodies burn through many nutrients at an increased rate. Our heart beats faster, using more calcium, magnesium, and iron. Our adrenal glands release hormones to make our minds and bodies more alert, requiring increased amounts of B vitamins and magnesium. Our nervous system works harder, which also uses more B vitamins and magnesium. We often burn more through more minerals and vitamins for stress adaptation than if we were doing physical exercise. It's no wonder we become run down over time if we're continually exposed to a stressful condition. And the problem is the food is being depleted by the fertilizers. And I'm, when I say depleted, I'm talking about 80%. Now, we're talking about food, actually. We're actually talking about the mental process. Because what I'm saying is, look, the environment is degenerating. It's degenerating at a progressive rate. And therefore, we need to make sure that we are doing what we can. We can't put it right food-wise. It is impossible. We can't put it right pollution-wise. It is also impossible. I mean, pesticides is another area. You buy your apples from the shops, you get plenty of fruit, fine. What's on the outside of it? Can you wash it all off? So you peel it off, all right, you get rid of the most minerally rich area, which is the skin. Where do you draw the line? And besides, the actual fruit that you're eating anyway is probably GM. You know, again, where do you draw the line? If we turn over to Habakkuk, Nahum, after Nahum, Hosea, Joel, Amos, Obadiah, Micah, Nahum, Habakkuk. But there are problems predicted as far as you know, the plagues are concerned, and GM seeds and the pollution and everything else that's taking place. It says a prayer of Habakkuk on the prophet upon the Shigaloth. O Eternal, I've heard, this is chapter 3, by the way, I've heard your speech and I was afraid. O Eternal, revive your work in the midst of the years, in the midst of the years, make known in wrath, remember mercy. In other words, he's listened to what the prophecies are. He can see what is actually is ahead, and he's afraid by what he actually sees. And he goes on into verse 16. It says, when I heard, my belly trembled. My lips quivered at the voice of rottenness entered my bones, and I trembled in myself that I might rest in the days of trouble. But it'd probably be better to be dead rather than actually go through what it seems to be implicated. In Habakkuk 3, verse 16, at the end, it says, when he comes up upon the people, he will invade them with his troops. And then he goes on and says, it gives the quieting. He says, look, although the fig tree shall not blossom, neither shall fruit be in the vines. And you wonder whether that might be to do with the bees being poisoned. Again, many of these poisons, many of the GM, they're talking about the mobile phones, they're talking about the parasites, the general weakness of the bee population. And I think it was Einstein said that if you get rid of the bees, you get rid of civilization. It's gone. Neither shall fruit be in the vines. So although the fig tree doesn't blossom, or fruit is in the vines, the labor of the olive shall fail. The fields shall yield no meat, no food. The flock shall be cut off from the fold, and there shall be no herd in the stalls. In other words, all these things, literally, the very foundation of life falls apart. Yet I will rejoice in the Eternal. I will joy in the God of my salvation. The Eternal God is my strength, and he will make my feet like hinds' feet, and he will make me walk or tread down upon the high places. So the focus is in such a situation, with the environment degenerating as it is, the mind has got to be focused in the right way. Get your mind focused in the right way, and what food there is then made more available to us, more useful for us. So we've got to have a handle on this mentally if we're going to get through it. what is actually coming on the world and what we are currently in on the world, as far as the world is concerned. As I say, the environment is indeed degenerating. And when we look at the future, and this is why I'm talking about the gut, the heart and the bones, when we're looking at the future, if we turn over to Jeremiah chapter 30, it says, "The word that came to Jeremiah from the Eternal, saying, Thus speaks the Eternal God of Israel, saying, Write you all the words I have spoken to you in the book." Now, why is he doing that? Basically, because it's for days to come. "For lo, the days come, says the Eternal, that I will bring again the captivity of the people. Israel and Judah," says, notice, "Israel and Judah," said the Eternal, "and I will cause them to return to the land that I gave to their fathers, and they shall possess it." Now, that has not happened yet. So we're looking at a future event that is to take place. "And these are the words that the Eternal spoke concerning Israel and concerning Judah," both together. "For thus says the Eternal, we've heard a voice of trembling, of fear, and not of peace. Ask you now." Now, so it's talking about fear at that time, and it's talking about Israel and Judah together. It's talking about the end time, very clearly. "It says, ask now and see whether a man does travail with child. Why then do I see every man with his hands on his loins as a woman in travail, and all faces turned into paleness?" Now, yes, it could be chemical warfare being indicated here, but it's certainly the gut is being affected. And as we'll go on and examine the subject of the gut reaction, it has a huge degree of influence by the brain. The brain and the gut is together. They're tied together. The gut actually has a brain, a nervous system, very similar to a brain, linked in with it, surrounding it, actually governing it. It says, "Alas, for the day is great, so there's none like it. It's even the time of Jacob's trouble, but he shall be saved out of it. For it shall come to pass in that day, says the Eternal of hosts, that I will break his yoke, throw off your neck, and I'll burst your bonds, and strangers shall no more serve themselves of him, but they shall serve the Eternal their God, and David their king, who I'll raise up to them. Therefore fear you not, O my servant Jacob." So what's the instruction? The instruction is, don't be fearful of this. Get your mind focused on something which is into the future. Get your mind focused on God's, what God is going to do, and what, how this is going to take place. And even though you see people with you know, hands on their loins, where their guts are affected, if we have our minds focused on the future, then where it is dependent on our actions, then the health will be there. And where it's not dependent on our actions, then God's help will be there. And we don't have to fret. We don't have to worry about it. "Therefore, do not fear, my servant Jacob, says the Eternal, neither be dismayed, O Israel. For lo, I will save you from afar, and your seed from the land of their captivity. And Jacob shall return, and shall be in rest, and be quiet, and none will make him afraid. For I am with you, says the Eternal, to save you. Though I make a full end of all nations that have scattered you, I will not make a full end of you, but I will correct you in measure, and not leave you altogether unpunished." So, again, when we look at this particular passage of Scripture, it's very clear that it's talking about the end time, and at that time there is going to be a problem with literally the alimentary canal. So if we look over in Luke chapter 21, again we see physical changes that people, physical problems that people will have at this particular time, that's this particular juncture. Now, if we don't have the kind of faith that we need, if we don't have the kind of trust in God, if we aren't living a certain way and trying to align ourselves with God, if we're going down the route of the medical profession at every juncture, at every turn, I'm not saying we don't ever use anything to do with the medical profession, I'm not saying that at all. But if that is our recourse, what's going to happen at this particular juncture? Because that's the chances are they're not going to be able to cope with it. You know, God is going to destroy the gods of the nations. And here in Luke 21, in verse 25, it says, "And there shall be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring." Now, we haven't seen any of this to any real degree. We've seen a certain amount of it, but nothing what it's talking about here. We're talking about heavenly signs. They come before the day of the Lord, but after the great tribulation. So we haven't got there yet by any stretch. But at that time, because of what they'll see, it says men's hearts failing them for fear. And there is a problem. If you have something which is which we'll go into, we'll talk about the heart a bit more. But there is a problem. If we don't have the mental approach, or if we have the wrong kind of mental approach, our hearts are affected. I mean, you know what it's like. If you're doing something, you think you're alone in the room, and your husband or wife comes back early and then just taps you on the shoulder, what happens to your heart? Is it not affected? Of course it's affected. Your heart pounding like the old chest goes in and out. Men's heart failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the power of the heavens shall be shaken. And it's certainly something that is coming, and it will cause a certain physical reaction. And then they will see the Son of Man coming in a clouds with power and great glory. And when these things begin to come to pass, and you know, you think, well, what's he talking about? Just the heavenly signs? I would say it goes back to the time that we're in now. When we look at the problems, the environment degenerating, where the financial chaos, which is right on the horizon, many, many things like this that we should be able to see today at this particular time. And when these things begin to come to pass, then look up, lift up your heads, for your redemption draws nigh. In other words, you look forward, you look at what is going to come, and you make sure that you focus on that, that our mind is on that. That is not worried and anxious and fretting. Because if it is, our health will be affected. We will not survive physically if we don't get a handle on this now. Because physically speaking, we are going to go through, before even the tribulation comes, there's going to be a time of problems. And he spoke to them a parable. Behold the fig tree and all the trees. When the they now shew forth the sea, you see and know of your own selves that summer is now near at hand. So likewise you, when you see these things come to pass, know that the kingdom of God is near at hand. Truly I say to you, this generation shall not pass until all be fulfilled. Heaven and earth shall pass away, but my words shall not pass away. And it's the words that we put our faith in. Then, when you see these things, you lift up your heads. You lift up your heads physically, yes, and you look up at the heavenly signs and see them and notice them. But you lift up your head spiritually, mentally, be encouraged by these things. That's what it's also talking and implying. It's saying, telling us to be encouraged by them, not be downcast, not to have chins on our chests. But to be encouraged by them, because our redemption is drawing near. And it's because we understand that because of what it says in verse 33, that my words shall not pass away. So the heart, so not only is the gut a problem, but also the heart is a problem as well. And if we turn over to Psalm 91, a very encouraging psalm, and one that we turn to frequently when we look at the end time. But again, be aware of what it says. It says that he that dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. And it's written in poetic language, yes it is, but it doesn't negate. In fact, if anything, it heightens what it's actually saying, what it's actually telling us. That we are looked after, we are under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say to the Eternal, he is my refuge and my fortress, my God, and in him I will trust. Surely he shall deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from the noisome pestilence. He shall cover you with his feathers, and under his wings shall you trust. His truth shall be your shield and your buckler. There's that word, the faith that we have in that word. That is therefore the shield And the buckler. Now, a buckler is a small shield. So a small one that fits apparently on the forearm. But a shield is a great big one, a bigger shield that is there. So the shield and the buckler, they're both defensive in that way, fending off the problems, whatever problems there may be. But it says, you shall not be afraid for the terror by night, nor for the arrow that flies by day. In other words, these are the problems he's talking about. Nor for the pestilence that walks in the darkness, nor for the destruction that wastes at noonday. So he's repeating that verse 5 and verse 6. 6 is repeating what he's saying in verse 5. For the terror at night, in other words, the pestilence. And again, it goes on and it says, 1,000 shall fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Now, I'm not suggesting that this will happen, this will occur purely by physical means, by having, you know, power of positive thinking. That's not what I'm talking about. I'm talking about the power, the real physical power of godly thinking. Because where that thinking itself and where we fail, God will step in. We don't have to worry. And even if he allows us to die, it still doesn't mean that we have to worry. Even though he slay me, as Job said, yet will I trust in him. And that should be our attitude. It says, only with your eyes shall you behold and see the reward of the wicked. Because you've made the eternal, which is my refuge, even the most high, your habitation. So we're in good company. David put his trust in God, and so must we. There shall no evil befall you, neither shall any plague come near your dwelling. For he will give his angels charge over you to keep you in all your ways. So we don't have to worry, we don't have to fret. And we shouldn't be worrying, we shouldn't be fretting. And that, again, it helps, physically speaking, it has more, as we'll go on and see, well, it's more important in many respects than even not smoking. If you look at it purely physically, the mental approach has a greater effect in certain instances, even than smoking. They shall bear you up in their hands, lest you dash your foot against a stone. You shall tread upon the lion and the adder, the young lion and the dragon shall trample under your feet. I'm talking about the spiritual realm now. Because he has set his love upon me, therefore will I deliver him. I will set him on... No, notice, he set his love upon me. In other words, you love God with heart, soul and might. Because of that, then I will deliver him and I will set him on high because he has known my name. He understands the authority that is there and the way in which God, when the word of God is there, even through death, we can trust him right the way through death itself. He shall call upon me and I will answer him and I will be with him in trouble. I'll deliver him and honor him and with long life will I satisfy him and show him my salvation, my rescue. So when we're looking at the future tribulation, certainly the tribulation, but even the future before the tribulation, it's destined not to become easier for us. It's destined to become more difficult and more fraught. And yet we've got to get a handle on these things. This is why I say it. It's, if anything, it's more important than food, because we may be reliant on God for food. It may be ravens bringing us food before we're finished, as it was with Elijah. Who knows? I mean, certainly, how are we going to be fed in a place of safety? We're going to have to rely on God for that. We're going to have to rely on God for the physical, material needs that we have. And certainly, when we come to the physical need for faith, just think about, put in your notes, Daniel 3 about Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They said to Nebuchadnezzar, they said, look, we're not afraid to say to you, Nebuchadnezzar, the God that we serve is quite capable of releasing us from your power. But if he doesn't, it doesn't make any difference. I'm not bowing down to your idol. So you might get used to it, get over it. And this is Nebuchadnezzar they're talking to. His visage was changed more than, he therefore... It got exceedingly angry, which is to say the least. But who was free? Who was the one that was under stress? Was Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego under stress? Well, in naturally speaking, yes, they would have been. But the indication was that they weren't, because they knew what they had to trust. Their trust was in God. The one who was under stress was Nebuchadnezzar. He was the one that was under stress. He was the one whose visage was more changed than he was before, and got the furnace heated up 7 times hotter than it should have been. But if you turn over to Hebrews chapter 2, you see the whole world lies in fear. The whole world is, and this is the reason where we look at the indications in Jeremiah 30, where it talks about how each man with his hands on his loins, or Luke 21, that talks men's hearts failing them for fear, or the pestilence that walks and during the night time in Psalm 91. There is a fear there. What are people afraid of, ultimately? Well, they're afraid of death. That's what they're afraid of. And in today's society, more than anything else, we have a bereft society. We're murdering children on one end of the scale, with children in the womb, and then we're torturing old people on the other end of the scale by keeping them alive too long. And why? Because we are bereft of righteousness, of anything which is godly. Our mental processes are warped, they're deviant, they're perverse. They're going in a direction that doesn't believe, you know, that has to hold on to life for all it can, but then discard life in the early years. You know, treat it as a purely biological thing instead of being a potential son of God. But here in Hebrews chapter 2, it says in verse 9, we see Jesus, who was made a little lower than the angels for the suffering of death, crowned with glory and honour, that he by grace of God shall taste death for every man. For it became him of whom are all things, and by whom are all things, in bringing many sons into glory, to make the captain of their salvation perfect through sufferings. For both he that sanctified and they that are sanctified are all of one. They're of one family, of one spirit, of one mind, of one approach, of one way. For which cause he's not ashamed to call them brethren, of one DNA, coming from the one father, the same mother. Saying, I will declare your name unto my brethren. In the midst of the church I will sing praise unto you. And again I will put my trust in him. And again, behold, I and the children which God has given me. For as much then as the children are partakers of flesh and blood, he also likewise took part of the same, that through death he may destroy or nullify or annul him that has the power of death, that is the devil. Nullify his power, in other words. Nullify his control. The power, you know, Satan holds that power over people, and he's produced a society that is terrified of death. Is terrified, thinking that that's all there is. The end of life is death, and yet treats a potential son of God as a worthless piece of protoplasm to be discarded in from the womb. And deliver them who through fear of death were all their lifetimes subject to bondage. And that we have a certain faith that goes right beyond death, will go right through death if necessary, allows us to trust God come what may. We know that we can be healed, and we know that we will be healed, that God will heal us. And it may be this side of death, it may be the other side of death, but he will heal us. And that healing is sure. It is absolutely rooted in belief on the scriptures, belief on the word of God. And if we go over to Hebrews 11, just over a couple of pages, we see this crucial, within the entire book of Hebrews 11, book or chapter of Hebrews 11, it says in verse 6, it says, without faith it's impossible to please him. For he that comes to God must believe that he is, but there's more to it than that. It's not just that he believes that he is, but he's also a rewarder of those that diligently seek him. It's the two things. We believe that he is, yes, we believe that God is who he says he is, but it's also that he's a rewarder of those that diligently seek him, so that, in fact, we don't have to fear, because if we are diligently seeking him and diligently seeking his will, he will watch over us. We don't have to fret about it. Even if he takes us right the way through and we die, as it says in chapter 13, it says in verse 5, it says, let your conduct be without covetousness and be content with such things as you have. For he says, I will never leave you nor forsake you, so that we may boldly say that the Lord is my helper and I will not fear what man can do to me. This is the idea in the mind of Shadrach, Meshach and Abednego. You know, we're not mincing our words when we reply to you, Nebuchadnezzar, but because of the God that we serve is quite capable of releasing us from your grasp and from the fiery furnace if necessary. But if he doesn't, we're not going to go ahead and bow down to an idol. You know, they were bold. They were incredibly bold. But you see, if we turn back to John chapter 1, this being who made all that exists, he was there right at the very beginning, right at the beginning of time, with the Father, the two individuals, bound together by one common spirit. And it says, in the beginning was the Word, the Logos, and the Word was with God, and the Word was God. The same was in the beginning with God. When time began, time was created by Jesus Christ. It says, all things were made by him, including time, and without him was not anything made that was made. So he was right at the very start of everything that we see, everything that we experience. And in him was life, and the life was the light of men. And the light shone in the darkness, and the darkness didn't grasp it. Darkness couldn't understand it, couldn't get hold of it, had no comprehension of what it was that they were witnessing, and that's the world. The world lies in fear, is in fear of death, lies in darkness. But because we have an illuminated perspective of things, we can have faith in this being here. And what it says in verse 9, it says, this was the true light which lights every man that comes into the world, looking into the future, looking into the time when everyone will have their first chance. He was in the world, and the world was made by him. The world did not know him. He came to his own, and his own received him not. But as many as received him, to them he gave the power to become the sons of God, even to them that believe on his name, on his authority. Now, if we understand this, we understand and we understand what it means, then he's not finished creating. He's still creating. And we can have a certain relaxed faith about this fact, that he is still creating and we are involved in that creation. And therefore, we don't have to worry. And we don't have to worry right through death if necessary. And eventually, it says, in Hebrews 11, these all died in faith. We should recognize that. They did die in faith. Which were begotten, not of blood, nor of the will of flesh, but the will of man, nor of the will of man, but of God. And the Word was made flesh, and dwelt among us, and we beheld his glory, and the glory of the only begotten of the Father, full of grace and truth. But he continues to create, and we need to make sure we understand just who it is that we have our faith in. Now, Mr. Armstrong had to learn this himself with a very difficult lesson. He had to learn it when his father died, that it goes right the way through at the point of death. You know, Christ and the Father are in control of the entire process, and we can have, therefore, complete and total faith, a complete relaxed faith in God. It says, God has not promised that by continual healing, this is page 57 of the healing booklet, God has not promised that by continual healing we shall never die. As in Adam, all die. It's appointed unto when a man wants to die, but after this the judgment in Hebrews 9:27. God has positively promised to heal, and he names the conditions which are obedience and faith, but God has not told us how soon or when he will heal. He expects us to trust him with that. That most certainly should not weaken or destroy our faith. It should make our faith more sure. I know in this deceived and evil world of Satan's, it seems that the worst thing that can happen is death. But it's not. He goes on, he says, our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all died in faith. My own human father died in faith. God promises to them are yet sure. The promise is still there. And we need to be able to trust God right the way through with our life. And so when we're looking at this physical need for faith, it's the physical need is not just trusting God so that we can go ahead and have a healthy lifestyle. That is almost like a side issue. But it is part of the process. It's part of the issue. We are actually designed, our brains have been designed in a certain way that they pump out hormones. They pump out pumps out hormones. I think it's something like 30-something-odd hormones that are actually then mixed together to produce an almost unlimited number, spread of different hormones that go into our bloodstream. And that governs every aspect of our existence. And God has made it in such a way so that if our mind is going down His way, the results are positive. If our minds are going down against His way, the results are negative. And as we'll go on and we'll see, we'll notice that a little bit more. But he says here, our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, all died in faith. My own father died in faith. God's promises to them are yet sure. Because, you know, we go right the way through death. Instead of causing us to lose faith, this wonderful knowledge should strengthen our faith. We know we may place ourselves in God's hand and rely on Him. So we rely on God totally, utterly, completely. And this being, if you turn over to Psalm 102, you know, we're not dealing with a doctor. We're dealing with a healing God, and this is the healing God. It's not a healing God, it's the God, Yahweh Rapha. And as it says in verse 11, it says, my days, in Psalm 102, verse 11, my days are like a shadow that declines. I am withered like grass. As I'm going down to the grave. Eventually, every breath that we take is one breath less. But you, O Eternal, shall endure forever. And your remembrance to all generations. You shall arise and have mercy upon Zion for the time to favour her. Yes, the set time is to come. For your servants take pleasure in her stones and favour even the dust thereof. So that the heathen shall fear the name of the Eternal and all the kings of the earth your glory. When the Eternal shall build up Zion, he shall appear in his glory. And we focus on that. We understand that, look, that time when he appears in his glory, if we have died, we'll be resurrected. And we will be there with him at that particular time. And as it says in verse 24, it says, I said, my God, take me not away in the midst of my days. Your years are throughout all generations. Of old you have laid the foundation of the earth, and the heavens are the work of your hands. You know, you go back, from all we can tell, it is billions of years old, the universe and the earth. Literally thousands of millions of years old. And God was here, Jesus Christ was here, and watching what is going on all that time. Of old you have laid the foundations of the earth, the heavens are the work of your hands. They shall perish, but you shall endure. Yes, all of them shall become old like a garment. As a vesture you shall change them, and they shall be changed. It's new heavens and new earth. The heavens and earth will remain, but they were going to be changed. It's new heavens. Why? Because they're physical. But you are the same. Your years shall have no end, and the children of your servants shall continue, and their seed shall be established before you. So that we will have, within the church, have an eternal inheritance. And we can put our faith, our trust in that, and that then will give us the help that we need when we come to the physical side as well as the spiritual side. It's both is actually helped by that. So let's have a look at three areas, the gut, the heart, and the bones. And as a way of introduction, turn over to Deuteronomy chapter 7. Deuteronomy chapter 7. And understand something. It says in verse 9, it says, know therefore that the Eternal your God, he is God, and that is Jesus Christ, one that became Christ. He is God, the faithful God, that keeps covenant and mercy with them that love him, and keep his commandments to 1,000 generations, and repays them that hate him to their face to destroy them, and he will not be slack to him that hates him, and he will repay him to his face. And I say, our bodies have been made to respond to certain types of emotions, certain types of mindsets. The mindset that goes God's way will produce a beneficial result. The mindset that goes against God's way will produce a negative result, physically, in our bodies. You shall therefore keep the commandments and the statutes and the judgments which I command you this day to do them. In other words, go down that certain way. Now, to do that, to do them, they've got to think to do them. They've got to determine themselves to do them. Therefore, it shall come to pass, if you listen to these judgments and you keep them to do them, as I say, it's a mental process that's got to be there first. You don't do the commandment without thinking about it. It just doesn't work that way. You think about it first, and then you do them. You listen to these judgments, keep them and do them, and then the Eternal your God shall keep unto you the covenant and the mercy which he swore to your fathers. And he will love you and bless you and multiply you. He will also bless the fruit of your womb, the fruit of your land, your corn, your wine, your oil, the increase of your kine, the flocks of your sheep, the land which you swore to your fathers to give you. Now, is he going to have to step in every single time just to bless? Or is it a natural blessing? It's a natural blessing. It's the right. He's built the entire system so that naturally it will bless. And he will then step in, and if an enemy comes against the land, he will step in and protect. He will do what is necessary. He will go above and beyond. And as far as the church is concerned, he will protect and help right through death if necessary. You shall be blessed above all people. There will not be male or female barren among you or among your cattle. And the Eternal will take away from you all sickness and will put none of the evil diseases of Egypt, which you know, upon you, but will lay them upon all of those that hate you. Now, why is does he have to actively do this? I don't think so. Because if you're keeping God's laws, you're going down a certain route, you're a certain way of thinking, that will naturally benefit and give health, which will naturally cause you to replenish the land and therefore give to the land and give to the animals. You look after your animals. That is all part of the law of God. And therefore these things will come back on us in benefit. So what about the ones that that hate you and lay them upon those that hate you, these diseases of Egypt? Well, if they're hating you and you are keeping God's law, they are hating God's law. They are actively hating, and a mental process is going against the way of God, against the laws of God. They're hating that. What then results? Well, they have the opposite result. The opposite result occurs. So you have the laws of God both being beneficial and also being negative as well. Now, in a book that is called the Holistic Health Handbook, under Panic as a Disease, a chapter called Panic as a Disease, it says, panic constricts blood vessels. This reduces blood flow and makes it difficult for the different systems of the body to function. It makes it especially hard for the brain to do its job. And when I speak of the brain doing its job, I don't mean trying to think oneself into a higher state of consciousness. I'm talking about the human brain as a gland, the most prolific gland in the human body. 5 years ago, when I came to UCLA, I asked my colleagues at the Brain Research Institute for a list of all the secretions produced by the brain. I received a list of 34 substances. Some of these allowed the body to alleviate its pain. Some help combat infections, others help fortify the immune system. But today they don't even dare to count the number of brain secretions. The brain can combine the subunits available to it into an almost infinite number of substances. The brain is a powerful apothecary. In some circumstances it can secrete and prescribe substances far more helpful than any drugs. But under circumstances of fear, panic, pain, exasperation, or rage, it's extremely difficult for the brain to produce the appropriate substances. So these things are flooding out of the brain. As you think, as we think, these have an effect on us. Let's say, what happens when you, your husband or your wife comes and taps you on the shoulder and you're not expecting it? The heart suddenly, you know, all the fight or flight kicks in. The brain has a connection, presumably, to the adrenals. The adrenals are over the kidneys in the back. And that floods the body with adrenaline and cortisol as well. And cortisol, you know what cortisol is made of? Vitamin C. It comes from, vitamin C is used in the production of cortisol. Therefore, if you're under stress, you tend to need a progressive amount of vitamin C. You need a greater degree of vitamin C. So, let's come on to the subject of the gut. Now, let's have a look at some of the scriptures involved. Let's have a look at Proverbs. Go to Proverbs 13. In verse 25, it says, "The righteous eats to the satisfying of his soul, but the belly of the wicked shall want." Now, as I mentioned to you before, under stress, we need more nutrients. And the nutrients, the mineralization, the vitamin content, the minerals certainly have gone down by about 80% in most cases of virtually all the vegetables that we eat today. So this is becoming a problem. But the righteous eats to satisfying of his soul. His physical, if you're righteous, if the thinking is going in a certain direction, then he gets the nutrient out of the food. But it says the belly of the wicked shall want. Even though he eats, you know, better is a dinner of herb than love is, the stalks and hatred therewith. If the belly of the wicked shall want, it'll be lacking in nutrient. It won't gain the nutrient. Because the actual gut has got to be, well, there is a brain actually within the gut itself, as we'll go on and talk about. Turn over to chapter 18, verse 8. It says, "The words of a talebearer are as wounds, and they go down into the innermost parts of the belly." Somebody goes spreading rumours. And, you know, you get that all the time today. In the world specifically, you get it all the time. You go into the various magazines and newspapers, and this court case is going on in London at the moment. Inquiry, isn't it? An inquiry is going on about the newspapers and the phone hacking and everything else. But it's the words of a talebearer, and they go into the innermost parts of the belly. It caused enormous consternation because people actually started suspecting their own family, not realizing that some grovelly little reporter was hacking into their mobile phone voicemail messages. Notice in verse 20, "A man's belly shall be satisfied with the fruit of his mouth, and the increase of his lips shall he be filled." In other words, if you have the right kind of approach to things, and the fruit of the mouth actually it's a play on words, admittedly, but it also has the physical sense as well. Over the page to chapter 20, this is quite an interesting one, verse 27. It says, "The spirit of man is the candle of the eternal, searching all the inward parts of the belly." And I just wonder, you know, the spirit in man, where does the spirit in man, is it only in the brain? You see, the way that the Gnostic heresy goes, you've got the hedonistic view of life and the Epicurean view of life on one side, and then the Stoic way and the way that it pushes down the body on the other. Both of them trying to vie for the elevation of the soul, in quotes, elevation of the spirit element. Whereas it says here that the spirit of man is the candle of the eternal, searching to the innermost parts of the belly. He can see down into the very innermost parts. And you just wonder whether, in fact, this holistic view of things should also be applied into the way that the spirit in man actually works as well. Let me just read something from a book entitled Gut Reaction. It's talks about this on page 14. It says, the intelligence below. It says, until relatively recently, conventional wisdom held that the central nervous system controlled the gut, and that the gut itself was merely a tube with simple responses. In fact, the gut has its own brain, called the enteric nervous system, which is situated in the sheaths of tissue lining the esophagus, stomach, and small intestines and colon. This brain is composed of 100 million neurons, more than are found in the spinal cord, as well as neurotransmitters and proteins. Almost every chemical substance known to be involved in controlling the brain in the head, including serotonin, 24 brain proteins, a class of a body's natural opiates, and some psychoactive chemicals, is a component of this enteric nervous system, as are major cells of the immune system. So there's a brain. When you think about it, you throw the food down, and it gets on with it. Well, how does it get on with it? You just throw the food down into a car. Any old food that you wanted to put into the car, if there weren't sensors in there to actually be able to, or into a furnace or into something like that, where you have sensors to determine what in fact is being thrown at it, well, that's what's happening with the gut. So through its two networks of nerves, the brain in the gut controls the rate of digestion, the movement of secretions of the mucous lining of the intestines, the contractions of the various muscles of the gut wall. In this lower brain, there are mast cells involved in immune responses, cells that nourish nerve cells and blood-brain barriers that keep harmful substances away from important nerve cells. There are also sensors for sugars, proteins, acidity, the other factors that determine how the gut mixes and moves the contents. It is a sophisticated system, an incredible system. And it says the brain above and the brain below derive from the same clump of tissue called the neural crest and are connected by the 2,000 or so nerve fibres of the vagus nerve. However, the two function independently, and the relationship between them seems to be complementary. The degree to which the enteric nervous system works independently and yet in harmony with its counterpart is startling. Research has shown how the two brains can influence and upset each other. Researchers in the United States estimate that a quarter of the people taking antidepressants such as Prozac suffer from diarrhea, constipation, or nausea because the drugs act on the serotonin in the gut. So thinking is acting on the brain with antidepressants. It's actually acting on that brain and the brain on the gut, because they're both so similar. Similarly, drugs like morphine and heroin attach to the gut's opiate receptors, causing constipation. At night, the brain in our head sets a pattern of 90-minute cycles of slow-wave sleep interspersed with periods of rapid eye movement, sleep when we dream. Meanwhile, as we sleep, the gut's brain produces 90-minute cycles of slow-wave muscle contraction interspersed with short bursts of rapid muscle movements. The two are going in sync together. And when we look at the problems in the end time, with each man with his hands on his loins, it's the way then their approach, their mental approach, that has so much to do with it. It has so much to do with it. Patients with bowel problems are known to have abnormal rapid eye movement sleep. One explanation for this is that the two brains influence each other during the phase. This idea is not so far-fetched if we recall that certain foods can cause us to have nightmares or bad quality sleep. But there, again, we are fearfully and wonderfully made. And so when we look at the gut and the brain that is actually linked into that gut, and when you consider it, I mean, if you take some salad that has not been irradiated and put through the chlorine baths and everything else that happens, if you go into the garden, you dig up some carrots, you grate the carrots, wash them first, and you go ahead and you get some cabbages and you grate the cabbages, you've got bacteria galore in there, but galore. And in our gut, in our bodies generally, there are 10 times the number of bacterial cells as there are human cells in our entire bodies. And most of that is in the gut. Just think about the the way in which the immune system has got to work on those cells. Here's the outside in, and it goes all the way through us, and yet it's kept in balance, in harmony. It's an absolutely fantastic system, a fantastic system that God has made, designed. And he's made it and designed it with a brain, and he's made our own brain function together with it. And what happens is, well, if our thinking is going down his route, then we have benefits. And if it goes down against his route, then we have negatives. And these are the two sides. And one influences the other. And we must make sure we keep this in mind. Here in Proverbs, if we turn back to chapter 13, yes, it's talking about mentally, and it's using the heart as a mental, the mental center, because it says, hope deferred makes the heart sick, but when desire comes, it's a tree of life. But the heart actually does, in fact, it is affected by our mental condition. And certainly, hope deferred does make the heart sick. If we're continually frustrated, then yes, we will find we'll find some major problems. Let me just read you. This is from Dr. Hans Saley, director of the Institute of Experimental Medicine and Surgery in the University of Montreal. Talking about stress, he said there exists a close relationship between work, stress, and aging. Aging results from the sum of all the stresses to which the body has been exposed during a lifetime. Each period of stress, especially if it derives from frustration, unsuccessful struggles, leaves some irreversible chemical scars which accumulate to constitute the signs of tissue aging. But successful activity, no matter how intense, leaves you with comparatively few such scars. On the contrary, it provides you with the exhilaration feeling of youthful strength. Even the very advanced age, work wears you out mainly through the frustrations of failure. Many of the eminent among the hard workers in almost any field have lived to a long life. Well into the 70s, 80s, or even late 90s, they lived a life of continual leisure by always doing what they like to do. And there's an article, actually, right in the very front page of the Telegraph yesterday. And it mentions about David Harpen, a senior number 10 aide, said that loneliness was a more powerful predictor of whether a pensioner would be alive for more than a decade than whether they smoked. And he goes on, he says, work matters particularly for older people. And he's basing his comments based on actual medical data. Work matters, particularly for older people, not just for money. Now, he's doing it as a government, trying to get people to work a longer period. Fair enough. But he's basing it on fact. Not just for money, but for absolutely for social contact, he says. Mr. Halpern presented a graph showing the links between health and a variety of lifestyle factors. We know smoking is really bad for you, he said. But much worse are things like social relationships. If you have got someone who loves you, someone you can talk to if you've got a problem, that is a more powerful predicator of whether you will be alive in 10 years, certainly more than smoking. So you can go ahead and you can smoke, and you can be happy and in social contact around you, or you can be miserable inside and not smoke. And it's the one that smokes but is happy inside that will tend to live longer, according to the research that has been done. So, certainly when we're looking at the heart, it is, and let's face it, if you're living longer, that means your heart keeps going longer. It's the heart that's, that keeps you alive. It's the heart and general well-being. I've got another one here from this Holistic Health and Handbook, talking about this panic as a disease, about how this individual who took an EKG and the doctor said, oh, you've had a heart attack. And he got so worked up that for the first time in his life, He had chest pains. He never had any chest pains at all. He just happened to take a regular ECG, and they said, oh, you've had a heart attack, or your heart's in real bad shape. And they actually put him down for bypass surgery. And this particular guy, this Tom Ferguson, got him aside and said, look, don't worry, because he reckoned he was about to die, because he was going in for this bypass surgery. And he said he's failed. What did he say? He says, what makes you think you're going to die? The doctor said I had a serious heart attack, he said. I flunked my treadmill test, I flunked my angiogram, my EKG is screwed up, and now they say I've got to go to major heart surgery. So no wonder he's feeling he's feeling under it. And what he did is he basically made the treadmill into a game over a period of a week or more. And finally got him on there where he controlled the treadmill. He didn't get somebody controlling it for him. If you've ever been on one of these treadmills, you normally fall off in a heap at the back of it. And he basically then got the doctors that had prescribed the bypass surgery in to watch him going through the treadmill without anything, any problem at all, no hint of any problem in the EKG, and it had just completely gone, vanished. So the mind has a huge, huge degree of influence on the gut because of that mind, but on the heart as well. The heart as well. Now, in addition to that, if you notice over in Genesis chapter 9, it says, God bless Noah and his sons. He said, be fruitful and multiply, replenish the earth. And he says, every moving thing that lives shall be food for you, even as a green vegetable have I given it to you, all things. But flesh with the life thereof, which is the blood thereof, you shall not eat. Now the life, the word life is nephesh, I believe, and it's the life in the blood. And where does the blood come from? Well, it comes from the bones. It comes from the bone marrow, and that bone marrow is very important to us. It's important particularly in the areas of resistance to disease. If we turn over to Proverbs, I should have said keep a hand in Proverbs, shouldn't I? But if we go back to Proverbs again and try going to Proverbs 14, in Proverbs 14, it says in verse 30, it says, a sound heart is the life of the flesh, but envy is the rottenness of the bones. And there does seem to be a great deal in that, that they have actually done research and found that there are real problems with the bones, with the bone marrow specifically. And this is certainly what God says, what Jesus Christ says, that I inspired Solomon to include in the book of Proverbs. If you turn over to Proverbs 17, verse 22, it says, a merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit dries the bones and causes that to destroy the bone function, the marrow function. And in the same way, you can put it down in your notes, Proverbs 3, verse 7 to 8, it says, do not be wise in your own eyes, fear the eternal, and depart from evil. It'll be health to your navel and marrow to your bones. So you're fearing the eternal, departing from evil. And if you're fearing the eternal and departing from evil, where's your mind? It's going down the right direction. You're having faith in the eternal. You're fearing him, yes, you're being respectful of him. But you're departing from evil, doing what is right. And it therefore is health to your navel, therefore there's a gut reaction. It's a marrow to your bones. It actually gives you the additional resistance that comes out of the marrow of the bones. In Proverbs 15, verse 30, put it in your notes again, Proverbs 15, verse 30, the light of the eyes rejoices the heart, and a good report makes the bones fat. Again, it joys you up, it buoys you up. And in chapter 16, verse 24, pleasant words are as a honeycomb, sweet to the soul and health to the bones. So the bones are also affected by the physical things that go on, certainly, but the mental things that go on. And our mental approach affects the gut, it affects the heart, and it also affects the bones and the immune response system. Final scripture, just turn over to Luke 21 again. Because we are going into a time when this is going to be vitally important to us. God expects us to look after our bodies, look after the bodies of the temple of His Spirit, and to make sure that our approach is a holistic approach, is a one that involves the mind as well, that we allow His thinking, His way of thinking, to predominate. And if there's one area that we need to make sure that we are getting, even if we've got problems physically, if there's an area to start on, is to make sure that we're thinking properly, that we go to God in prayer, that we, as it says here we have this problem, it says in verse 26 that men's hearts are going to be failing them for fear, or for looking after the things that are coming on the earth, for the powers of the heaven shall be shaken. And when you see the Son of Man coming in power and cloud, and it says, when you see these things, verse 28, then look up and lift up your heads, for your redemption draws nigh. Our approach has got to be different. And it says in verse 34, take heed to yourselves, lest at any time your hearts be overcharged with surfeiting and drunkenness, cares of this life, so that the days comes upon you unawares. For as a snare it will come upon all those that dwell upon the face of the whole earth. Watch therefore, and pray always. So watch and pray. Be in a mindset of prayer. Be in contact with God. Make sure we are going down the way of God. Make sure that our minds are going down that way, that you may be accounted worthy to escape all these things that have come to pass and to stand before the Son of Man. Yes, certainly, that is talking about physical protection. It's talking about physically going to a place of safety as well. But there is an element there that we can see, as I've shown you, that the mind that we have and the way and approach that we have actually does affect us physically. It affects our physical health, because it certainly is a physical power of godly thinking.